admit it. You're tired riding the roller coaster of the economy, and perhaps you're even beyond tired, weary, exhausted, and yes, stressed. You may be surprised to learn that the effects of a downturn in the economy on our health are not all bad, but they're not all good either. Many studies have been done and the results vary all over the place. We've asked our own Dr. Checkup from the Neck Up, Dr. Rich O'Neill, to help us wade through the differences. I think you'll find them fascinating. Good morning, Dr. Rich.
Good morning, Trish. How are you?
Thanks for taking some extra time with us this morning.
Sure.
We're going to begin with some of the bad news. Studies that say economic downturns aren't good for our health. Studies in the 1970s said that hard times create more deaths from heart disease, cirrhosis, suicide, homicide, and increased admissions to mental hospitals. And that makes sense to me. Tough times lead to sad outcomes. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, stress is a major factor contributing to heart disease. And maybe during bad times, we don't eat as well as we do when we have more money to spend on healthier food. And clearly, you know, cirrhosis is related to over-consuming alcohol. And if we're stressed out and we manage our stress by drinking, that's going to create more cirrhosis.
Yeah, I have a feeling that stress is going to be the theme in this entire conversation. And, you know, I think we're just beginning to discover all the bad things stress can do to us. Let's move on to more. They say that the economic downturns in 1974 and 82 seem to lead to more deaths from flu, pneumonia, and cancer, and increased suicides and homicides. Many of those were blamed on the fact that since we don't have universal health care, people couldn't afford to get the care they needed. That's depressing, too.
Well, there's also another factor, that stress has been shown to be related to lowering the effectiveness of your own immune system.
Really?
Yeah. So if you're stressed out, you're much more likely to catch the flu or to be susceptible to developing pneumonia. And then if it's compounded by not being able to get good medical care, you might have some even worse outcomes.
Well, I can actually see that, because I know when you're stressed, you don't sleep well, for instance. And when you don't sleep well, then your body isn't building the immunities it needs to be building against some of these things.
Yes, yes.
Interesting. All right. Now we're going to take some surprising turns. In some measures, overall health and longevity improved during recessions and bad times. In 1972 and 71, studies showed declines in the death rate. They said because there were fewer heart attacks and car crashes.
Uh-huh.
Now, how do we account for that?
Well, it's a good example of conflicting studies on the population level. And things can vary from one study to another depending on what population you study. But let's talk a little bit about the lowering of the motor vehicle accident death.
Okay.
People drive less because they don't have enough money. People
Or they're not going to work. They've lost their jobs and they're not going to work.
Right. So, and miles on the road correlate with increased death rates.
So that one would be kind of an easy conclusion to come to. But what about heart attacks? I thought that was interesting.
Well, again, you know, some people may, in that population, it may have been that going to work is a pretty stressful event.
Yeah.
And when you're not going to work, you might have some less stress, more time to relax. Depends how you spend your time.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about that in just a minute, because I think that's where we can go with good advice for our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's talk about some market research that was done just this past May that showed that because of economic problems, more families were eating at home and walking more, and that was actually improving health.
Yes.
But overall, the fear is that poor economic conditions will cause stress that interfere with family bonding. More people will lose jobs, and they lose their health care coverage when they're not working, and that adds still more stress.
Yeah, it depends. You know, one of the themes here for me would be, how are you going to manage this stressful event to turn it into something that works for you rather than against you?
So much of this is about attitude, isn't it?
Yeah, and your approach to solving the problem. So if you have more time, you've gotten laid off, or you have less work to do, then the question is, how are you going to make use of that time in a way that keeps you healthy, that keeps you bonded to your family, rather than turning it into arguing with your family?
Right.
Use it to spend some good time with your family, cook for each other, you know, cook healthy stuff.
There you go.
Go for a walk together, those kinds of things.
You know, I also, I do know that attitude has a lot to do with it and the way you approach it. My husband was laid off a couple of years ago, and he came home and he was so upset. And I said to him, this is going to be the best thing that ever happened.
Yes.
He had a job that he was just putting up with, you know, for lack of anything else. He wasn't changing because he wasn't taking the time, but he was forced into changing it. And just being supportive, he ended up getting the best job he's ever had, and he loves his new job.
That's great.
And I think that people can do that. I think that just even the way you talk about it can make a change.
Absolutely. If you, I think of it as a fork in the road. You know, we've talked about that
before.
Where at that moment, what you have is, and you might not be conscious of it, the trick is getting conscious of the choice, but you might have a choice there to go depressed, to target yourself, to blame yourself for losing the job, or like you sort of nudged your husband in the direction of, hey, this could actually be a good thing. How am I going to take advantage of this difficult situation and make my life maybe even better? And so taking the energy instead of directing it towards attacking yourself or drinking or whatever, and putting it into transforming your life.
What if we have somebody in our life who comes home from work or gets laid off or for whatever problem is having or for whatever reason is having that kind of a problem?
Yes.
Are there things we can do to bring along a spouse or bring along a child or an adult parent? Are there ways we can talk to them differently from others that will be helpful in the situation?
Sure. And where I'd point you there, actually, Tricia and everybody, is to looking back in your relationship and seeing what was particularly helpful to you and whoever it is you're concerned about, your spouse, whoever, and thinking, what helps? So there's no universal thing that helps every couple. Some people might just like to listen to each other. Some people might like to go for a walk. But if you think back, what did we do before? We had a tough spot. What helped us move along? Then ask them, hey, would this be something helpful right now?
Right.
And do it.
And, you know, I do think, too, it's time for a little more patience in our relationships, understanding
yes.
that these are outside factors that we have no control over
yes.
that are getting in our way.
Rather than targeting each other and yelling at each other.
Absolutely
yeah.
true. Well, Dr. Rich O'Neill, thanks so much for joining us this morning. You've helped us understand a little better. This is kind of our checkup from our wallets up, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Or emptying wallets. Yeah.
That's the truth. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Hi, I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. Evaluating the candidates, some how-to tips from job placement psychology. We're asked to do a difficult task in evaluating political candidates. Their every word may be calculated to get our vote rather than being what they truly believe and a promise of what they'll do in the future. Psychologists know that the success of predicting someone's actions is, well, fairly unpredictable. But psychologists do this all the time, and our research and experience has uncovered some useful things. Most importantly, we know that the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. If we check personal history, especially in past situations like those in the future job, we can make more successful predictions. But it has to be the person's actual behavior, for example, voting records, and not just other people's opinions about their behavior, that will help us know how they'll perform on January 20th and beyond. Also very important is how candidates have related to other people, especially in tense situations where we're all probably at our worst. Have they been successful in managing themselves in ways that generate goodwill and win-win possibilities for both sides? Diplomatic skills necessary today where we can't get what we want simply because we carry the biggest stick in town. But once we learn the historical facts, how do we temper our own biases and judgment in evaluating those facts? This election, for instance, is an unprecedented opportunity for our own stereotypes about race, gender, age, wealth, education, religion to skew our judgment. The problem is we tend to rate people highly on a number of characteristics just because they have one that we favor, especially when we have no relevant and contradicting information. For example, if we prefer African American, we'll likely rate that candidate more highly on, say, foreign policy smarts. Or if we think Caucasian is better, we might assume that candidate has a good grasp of the economy. To counteract this bias, attend to the boring old facts about the candidate's skills and their prior success using them. What if they have limited or no prior experience in some areas? Well, evaluate performance in similar areas. For example, while neither candidate has run the country before, both have been running complex national campaigns. Their leadership over the past 150 years or so of this campaign gives some evidence about how they do in the Oval Office. But we have another difficulty here. We block out data that contradicts the view we already hold. To counterbalance this one, next time you find yourself arguing away a disagreeable fact about your favorite or dismissing a good fact about the bad guy, take a moment to take it in and adjust your overall picture. You don't have to tell anyone you're reconsidering. Just be honest with yourself about who you decide would be best for our whole country before you pull the lever. See you at the polls. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.